This is PRN, the comprehensive news source for the world's progressive community. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Everybody from that nightclub at the end of the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, on Sunday, the 24th of March, 2013. It's amazing how we're making it this long, isn't it? It's been a hugely intense week. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of shifting energy. I'm sure almost all of you are aware. Let me start by making a correction. I had announced that Charles Eisenstein, who I'm so excited is coming back, author of Sacred Economics, several other books, who is just a true leader out here in this change of consciousness, will be back with us in 2 weeks on April the 7th. That will be before his appearance in Boulder, Colorado on the 12th, 13th, and 14th of April in Boulder, Colorado. I'm a-going, and he'll be here 2 weeks from tonight. Sorry if I said one. Okay, and tonight also, I'll tell you up front, we will be taking calls in the second half of the show. After we do the break at the bottom of the hour. It's been three weeks, maybe four, since we've been able to take in calls. I miss you guys. I want to hear from you, but we've got a tremendous amount to talk about. And, yeah. Okay, so last week's show with Graham Hancock was a record breaker across the board. I'm still getting enormously positive feedback from around the world. You all who were here heard that show and listened to the amazing energy and the great message that Graham put forth, and the chemistry. I think we could all feel a tuning fork being struck, and all of us starting to tune our strings, if you will. And that's the kind of tune up we need. Within 2 days, and I'm not sure exactly when it went up, of Graham's appearance on our show last week, and we do have some reach. Graham posted the following on his website: "Unprecedented developments at TED. I appreciate and respect the fact that TED have now bitten the bullet, which cannot have been easy for them, and fully retracted their original incorrect allegations against the content of my TEDx presentation, The War on Consciousness. They have done so by crossing out the original allegations and publishing my rebuttal here," and there's a link. You can find this at Graham's website, grahamhancock.com. "They have done the same as regards their original incorrect allegations against the content of the TEDx presentation, The Science Delusion, by my colleague Rupert Sheldrake." Great guy. And there's a video up earlier on my Facebook page this week of a conversation with Rupert Sheldrake and Terrence McKenna. That it was, oh my God, that was awesome. Pass the popcorn. "TED have also opened up," continues Graham, "a new blog page, Graham Hancock and Rupert Sheldrake, A Fresh Take," which is also linked from Graham's site. And Graham writes, "I want to put on record my immense appreciation and respect for the tremendous efforts made by so many members of my online community to get this injustice righted by their engagement on the TED website and the blog posts they have made there. I am touched and heartened, buoyed up, and encouraged by this remarkable level of support, and it is a sign of the times that our voice has been heard." Aho! That was me, not him. "TED continued to refuse to restore the talks to the original platform on which they appeared, the TEDx YouTube channel, where my talk had been viewed by more than 132,000 people and where Rupert's talk had been viewed by more than 35,000 people before TED took them down. I regard it as unfortunate in the extreme that all the conversations and comments that appeared there have been hidden along with the talks, and that those original links have been broken, and I will continue to press for the restitution of our talks to the TEDx YouTube channel, separate from and in addition to the presence they now have on the TED blog pages." Graham, you go, girl. You go. If we were able to put any wind behind your sails last week, we were certainly happy to do so here. It's nice to know that we have reach. It is nice to feel a response to effort and work on our part, and to see a change in the physical reality of the world in which we live. Well, that's a long, separate discussion for another time. But anyway, we helped out a lot, I think, and that was a monumental thing, because Ted was something of an icon, something not to be challenged, and so many people were awakened by the callous and brutal conduct of Ted and dishonesty of Ted, and of course their compromised integrity. I'm speaking for myself now, not for Graham. It's good when people wake up to that. Warriors who have been out here for a long time, like Graham, like myself, like so many others, we fully get how the system works. But that was a battle, and we won. Okay. Cyprus. Cyprus is like hugely important. Not only is what's going on in Cyprus, and the short version is this, and Max Kaiser, I wish you were, he may be listening out there, and if you are, hi, Max. Trying to summarize what's going on in Cyprus is we have a world of wash in debt, 400 trillion, whatever, 1.4 quadrillion, excuse me, in derivatives out there. That's debt that can never be repaid, you know, being followed by more debt. Cyprus being supposedly a weak, small island in the Mediterranean. And if you do not have a map, you need to go look and see where Cyprus is. That will tell you so much. I mean, map making was one of my themes for a long, long time. Cyprus sits maybe 100 miles south of the Turkish coast in the far northeast, far east corner of the Mediterranean Sea. It is much, much closer to Turkey, to Damascus, to Tel Aviv, than it is to Greece, than it is to Europe. But Cyprus is part governed by Greece and part by Turkey. Interesting relationships and frictions there, going back to the wars between Xerxes and the Spartans. A clash of empires, a clash of wisdoms, but also a clash of power blocks. Cyprus, being small, though, however, has a huge, ginormous banking industry that is not justified, just like many islands in the Caribbean Sea do, just like Panama used to. And it's a member of the EU, which, of course, like all the other members, the other junior members of the EU, have been screwed up the butt, thinking they were joining a family and finding out they were being looted. But what Cyprus does have is many, 62, 70, something, $1 billion in assets of foreign deposits, large foreign deposits from overseas. Now, of course, they haven't been able to keep up on the growth with all the usual IMF, World Bank, Euro, thumb-twisting, ball-breaking techniques, and they failed. But, gee, they have all these lucrative bank deposits. So now, in order to get a $10 billion bailout package from the European Union, they're going to steal, in a deal just announced hours, just a few hours ago, and this is from the Cyprus Mail. It's also breaking on Huffington Post. A deal where the government of Cyprus will take 30% off the top of all deposits in Cypriot banks over 100,000 euros. Now, they're going to create a good bank and a bad bank. Bottom line is, and Zero Hedge got a quick story up on this, and they got it right. Whichever bank becomes the good bank and whichever becomes the bad bank will be the bank with the most last names of depositors ending in OV, like Lavrov, Dimitrov, Bokarov, whatever, the Russians. And that has been a major source of contention here, because a lot of Russian oligarchs have a lot of money deposited in Cyprus. They hide their money there. And so now Europe is essentially saying to Cyprus, okay, we'll give you a bailout and let you reopen your bank so your people don't starve to death. I mean, people haven't been able to get money out of their banks. I don't know what the rake off the top is going to be on accounts under 100,000 euros, but everybody's got to lose something. And imagine just having that money just disappear out of your account. But so that's the blackmail that Europe is holding over, and said, okay, we'll give you the $10 billion if you manage to steal what now looks like to be $10 billion from Russian depositors. There was one story, I think, on Russia Today that said that the Russian depositors had $30 billion stashed away in this little tiny island with no economy. That 20% was going to go, so that's $6 billion. But now, it was only 20% yesterday. Now it's 30%. So that means $9 billion stolen from the Russians, which is something a little more tangible, I guess, than the debt that the EU is going to... This is, like, so sick. But there are tectonic forces at play underneath here. And this is where it gets amazingly thick from a geopolitical and multidimensional standpoint. Now, first, let's deal with the gas issue. Cyprus is very close to the eastern Mediterranean, to the shores of Lebanon, of Israel, of Turkey, and there are some natural gas deposits. They are not huge. I mean, I'm so sick of hearing about huge gas deposits, which for the last 12 years that I've been looking at them, none of them have turned out to be as huge as the press releases. That's a part of the issue, but that's irrelevant. Britain, the United Kingdom, which is not a member of the EU in the financial sense, however, sits at the end of the Russian natural gas pipeline. We wrote so much about this at From the Wilderness in 2003, 2004, 2005, relying upon the great tutelage of people like Colin Campbell, Matt Simmons, Chris Skorbowski of the Oil Depletion and Analysis Center. Colin Campbell, did I say Colin Campbell? Julian Darley. It was very clear, and I wrote about this extensively. And let me just parenthetically say at the moment that the United Kingdom is having absolutely horrendous cold weather, the worst snowstorms in 20, 30 years. And it was confirmed, it was a story, I believe, off the BBC. All this has been on my Facebook page. I think a lot of it's also been on the World News Desk at CollapseNet, but certainly on my Facebook page, that the United Kingdom is down to 36 hours of natural gas reserves in country. The standard from Matt Simmons was to have 30 days storage, down to 36 hours. And Russia has employed this tactic many times since 2003, 2004 with Ukraine and Belarus. And any uncooperative Eastern European nation, Latvia, Lithuania, and basically in the middle of winter, Russia says, we have this foreign policy, and we're shutting off your natural gas until you do what we want you to do. All of Europe, especially Germany and Northern Europe, are vulnerable and susceptible to that. There are no alternative replacements. There's still some gas flowing out of the North Sea, some coming from Norway, but not enough to keep the UK warm. So we have a snowstorm that we put up. It was a huge, great BBC story. Northern Ireland, the snows were so heavy that farmers and rural areas have been officially abandoned. So much snow that they can't get the snow plows to farmers, so the farmers can get to their farms to feed their livestock. Russia clearly has Britain by the balls. Now, throw into that mix the fact that Boris Berezovsky was found dead in his Surrey home in Britain. Now, Berezovsky, let me give you the background, because I wrote about this, too, at From the Wilderness. Some of it's in Rubicon. It got me invited to Russia in 2001 before 9/11. There were two major oligarchs, but oligarchs are people in Russia who became enormously, stupidly wealthy. After the fall of the Soviet Union, as the FSU, was capitalized, as people like Al Gore and Viktor Chernomyrdin and the Bank of New York and other banks went to Russia and said, "Well, we'll teach you how to do capitalism," and they raped Russia, destroyed their currency, starved hundreds of thousands of people. There were stories of people resorting to cannibalism in Moldova. And it was my articles on the money laundering of that through Bank of New York, which got me invited to a financial conference in Moscow in 2001 by the Ministry of Finance. Great story, great trip. So, two of the prime oligarchs who got super rich, one was a guy named Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who is now in prison languishing, I believe, somewhere in Kamchatka or East Siberia. who was the richest. He had Gazprom. And then there was Boris Berezovsky. Yeah, Krokul made a lot of money, but what, how different is that from George Soros or, you know, Warren Buffett or, you know, whoever, Jamie Dimon, whatever. But he had refuge in London, and Putin has a total vendetta against the oligarchs, and Berezovsky was, there's some spy stuff in the background, was like number one on the hit list, and he turns up dead. And I'm thinking, is it possible that Vlad Putin, playing this game of chess over Cyprus, said, well, you know, I can keep your gas going if we can make sure that Berezovsky is dead. There's another possible explanation. Berezovsky probably had a lot of money hidden in Cyprus. They're starting to talk suicide, but the Scotland Yard has announced that they are searching Berezovsky's residence for evidence of chemical, biological, or radiological poisoning. That goes back to the spy stuff. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in play here, but it gets deeper than that. Now, Russia is going to stay out of the EU business. The Cypriots have gone to Russia asking for a bailout, and I think Russia wisely and appropriately said, no, that's an EU matter. But clearly, there are tectonic forces moving, and this is Germany. This is Germany doing this. This is Germany occupying Cyprus, the ultimata, for all of these bailouts, the thumb-twisting, the screw-turning, the electrodes to the genitals, is all coming from Berlin, which now takes us into a unique historical archetypal pattern. And all of this now is couched in the context. We have to go back now to the great, if you will, Western struggle with Iran, and I think that's a very big factor here. Cyprus is a major intelligence listening post for Western powers. It is probably the eastern outpost of European projection. It is a small, you know, it's a small island, but it's a great aircraft carrier from which to launch airstrikes. And in that context, I've noted recently that Bibi Netanyahu has had a sudden rapprochement with President Erdogan of Turkey over the way Israel shot up and arrested people in Palestinian boatless. And I thought, that's unusual time for a rapprochement. But there are a lot of forces now circling around Cyprus, and this is a move to control Cyprus. And if, sadly, I think, Cyprus does go ahead with this bailout and surrender, kowtow, bend over for the European Union, I think there will be quick changes in political policy there. And again, this augurs towards a shift of power in preparation for a possible attack on President Assad in Syria and Iran. I noticed that our new Secretary of State, a man who I wouldn't trust any further than I could throw the Rock of Gibraltar, John Kerry, has cautioned Iraq about allowing its airspace to be used for flights allegedly shipping weapons from Iran to Syria. There's stuff moving deeply under the carpet in Cyprus. But symbolically, I think, Cyprus is getting people's attention in a very profound way, because people are realizing that there is a whole new stage of collapse that is upon us imminently. Just the thought that any government, could go in and seize money out of people's bank accounts as a tax, I mean, it really makes you feel violated. And geez, for those of you to whom this is just becoming an experience, welcome to the club. A lot of us have felt that way forever. So, with that being said, Cyprus is very much emblematic of a whole bunch of things that are shifting dramatically. It is not just some small nation. There are so many things at play in Cyprus. And we do have to see how this continues to play out. Everything else can change. There are key meetings of the EU tomorrow. But all of this also has a very interesting tie-in to some larger issues that we're going to get to after the bottom of the hour. And by the way, I will be taking calls tonight, 1-888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We'll pick up those calls after the station break. We got a few things to talk about before we get there. Now, going back to the other series of calamities around the world, Gary Null was totally correct in his analysis right before this that don't pay any attention to North Korea. It's all a sideshow. It's a reason to sell weapons. Don't worry about that at all. I'm continuing to watch China, and especially the hard weather in Britain. That just came up again, and maybe we can come back and touch on that. I really feel for the people in Britain and Ireland. But in China, we had a story this week that I'm scrolling down to. China's coastal waters, this is from Russia Today this week, China's coastal waters pollution doubles in just 1 year. And there's some photographs in this story that was from Russia Today, published on March 21st, that are disgusting. But just in the space of 365 days, the amount of trash garbage has doubled, and many of the beaches are no longer usable. And it is clear, is it not, that China may well die and collapse simply because people can't breathe and they're poisoned, let alone the earthquakes and the, you know, and everything else that's going on. But that would have been factored in, I believe, at some real cynical think tank in the 1960s. If we turn the Chinese are going to kill themselves on their own trash and pollution, which leads to, I'm not the one who coined this term, but I think it's going to become ever more prominent in our dialogue and our lexicon as time passes. Environmental refugees. And rather than hordes of zombies, let us think perhaps in terms of environmental refugees. So let me set up the song before we come back at the second half of the hour. As all this stuff is unfolding this week about Cyprus, there was some good dialogue, and a lot of people were getting really pissed off. I mean, and they're going, just makes you want to go out and say, well, makes you want to. Well. And I guess if you were Alex Jones, you would cheer that. But what I commented back was that one of the greatest skills of any warrior is the art of containment. And in spiritual study and in spiritual pursuit, the ability to contain powerful energies is widely regarded and widely held, because it is how our blades get sharp, if you will. By containing the energies and focusing, don't shoot unless you get a headshot. Do not waste your anger on and your efforts on things that will not produce results. And it's an art. It's a dance. It's sometimes very painful. But and then somebody came back and said, yeah, but sometimes you just need to cut loose. And I said, yeah. And instantly the song I'm going to play for you popped into mind. And it was so appropriate, especially if we step back and take a broader look at the collapse of human industrial civilization, at a rapidly evolving human consciousness, at the emergence of a new human paradigm and a new human, post-petroleum human. If we look at the changes that are underway, both good and bad, and the power in them, the song that first came out in 1965 and contains some of the absolute finest guitar playing I've ever heard in my life, and singing and vocal harmonies, becomes very appropriate. And as the seasons change here and we move into spring, happy spring, everybody. Let's hear the birds sing, Turn, Turn, Turn.
Time to every purpose under heaven.
Jim McGuinn, Gene Clark, David Crosby, Chris Hillman, and Michael Clark, the Byrds. And, boy, that was kind of appropriate. And, again, there's that tune-up that we need sometimes. And I got to have that music in here so we can take a breath and maybe things are under control and roll with that. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. When we come back after the break, I'm going to talk about a thread that came up. And, of course, we've been dancing in and around prophecies, and there's some interesting discussion and some revelations that came up with regard to Cyprus and the events. We're going to pick that up after we have these messages, and we'll take your calls right here on the Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. This is Tracker of Truth. Don't go away.
Oh, what a mess we left you. Oh, what a we left you against the odds and other gods. We left you such a mess,
posting on the tea and champagne.
What a mess we left you. Yeah, that was a weird kind of sense of New White Trash, newwhitetrash.com. You can go hear that in 37 songs from our first album, Double Wide, there at newwhitetrash.com. You can also start to hear some of the songs we've written for our new album. We're trying to raise some money to get the rest mixed and mastered and lay some tracks. We've got some killer songs. We will have some more for you in a week or two. We've got one amazing song that I'm really dying to play for you. But you can go and listen to some of the new stuff for free. You can download it for free, or you can make a donation for anywhere from $1 to $1 million if you want to. That's just the way it works, and make it a gift economy. If you like what you hear, thanks. And if not, Spirit's going to take care of us anyway. Anyway, back to the show. Okay, so we do have a caller already. Good. Jonathan from Philadelphia, are you there? Jonathan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, man. How are you?
All right. How you doing?
Good.
Listen, I just want to bring something to your attention. Something really bad happened to me this week. I happened to see an article in the Wall Street Journal. It was called, I just can't believe this. This is absolutely obscene. It's called America's Baby Bust by Jonathan V. Last.
America's Baby Bust?
Yes. And okay. Basically, what this guy is saying in this article is the whole problem with everything. In fact, I'll quote this. Here's something written. In the face of this decline, the only thing that will preserve America's place in the world is if all Americans, Democrats, Republicans, Hispanics, blacks, whites, Jews, Christians, and atheists decide to have more babies.
Oh, dear.
Can you believe the sickness of... Put it, and especially in the Wall Street Journal, because then I think, how many people are actually going to believe this?
The Wall Street Journal is a propaganda arm, and it serves, as do all corporate media. And remember who bought the Wall Street Journal? Rupert Murdoch. Okay. It serves as a propaganda organ, and birth rates in the United States are on the decline. Not to mention the fact that we have tens
Thank
of millions
God
of people
that.
Starving and homeless and everything else along all around the world. So, from a very superficial standpoint, that's a plea to go out and have some more babies so we can increase the tax base. But I think at a much deeper level, that's really offensive, because what it's trying to do is to prop up that whole consumer unlimited growth mentality.
Mm-hmm.
There was a movie, Jonathan, many, many years ago called They Live with Roddy Piper. You ought to find this movie. It's a classic. Roddy Piper, and I forget.
I'm writing it down.
They Live. It's awesome. It's about this muscular blonde dude in this really screwed up world like ours, who finds this pair of sunglasses that absolutely dehypnotizes him. So he puts on these sunglasses and he sees all of these evil people who are really like aliens, or they're just monsters or whatever. But as he walks by a billboard, you know, for a car, a Toyota, he puts on the sunglasses and it says eat, breed, consume, you know, and he's able to see through all of the stuff that passes for entertainment. I think what Ted shows us, and I think what everything else shows us now, is that we're starting to get our own sunglasses so we can see this crap instantly.
I hope so, Mike. I really do, because I think there's so many people out there that would read something like this and believe it. I mean, you keep saying that everyone's waking up, and I'll tell you, it's not happening around here.
I'm not saying everyone's waking up. I'm saying a lot of people are. You
yeah,
know,
I know.
And more are. And we may not know how many or how fast until we wake up one morning and a lot of things have changed. That's what we work for.
Yeah, hey, listen, Mike, I just want to say one thing. I have a new music that changes the consciousness level of the listener. Most of my songs are about the collapse of industrial civilization and what I've learned from you. And it's really taken off like wildfire. And I got your address. I want to send you a CD of it. I'd really like you to hear it.
I'd love to. Send it to me, man. I'll absolutely love to play it. Yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
The Broom Touring Company.
I love it.
That's my name.
All right, well, cool.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for calling, Jonathan.
All right.
Okay, guys. The number to call if you want to check in tonight is 888-874-4888. But now let me pick up a theme that I was going for right before we went into break. We've been talking about prophecy, and I've been making points that we've got to be careful what we throw out and what we don't see, or what we are moved to misinterpret. By the old meme, we are detectives looking for clues. I discussed the prophecy of St. Malachi, which had to do with other stuff. We have a new pope and meet the new pope. Same as never mind. But we talked about the prophecy of St. Malachi that said that the new pope might, some would call it the Black Pope, and some would say it would be the last pope, Peter of Rome. And there was some stuff in the prophecies of Malachi that struck true, so it bore watching. And of course, what we find out is apparently now with the appointment of Pope Francis, interesting choice of names, that St. Malachi's prophecy is not true. But that doesn't mean something happened with respect to Cyprus. I was so intrigued by all of the energies surfacing around Cyprus. I did a little Google search for a while, and Cyprus plus prophecy, and there are surprisingly a great many prophecies out there about Cyprus. But I came across one very impressive video. Now, and it's amazing the emotional responses that this has stirred, but also the apparent almost psychological blind spots that this has stirred. I have no affiliation with, I don't endorse, you all know my spiritual belief. I've been putting that out here like I'm, you know, running around naked for the last year. You all know what I believe. Called a trumpet, and Herbert Armstrong was a minister. Okay, fine. So I find this very well done video, and I look at it, and what I see in there is some amazing tie-ins. Now, when I was an undergrad at UCLA, I spent a lot of time deeply fascinated with modern European history, modern meaning since the fall of the Roman Empire. And what had happened, and there was a lot of study and work about in history at UCLA. I majored in poli-sci, but I took a lot of history courses and a lot of speech courses, but about incarnations or evolutions of the Holy Roman Empire, and if you will, the extended influence. And there have been many incarnations of the Holy Roman Empire, but I had never really considered that the EU was just such another incarnation. Well, in this tape that went up on my Facebook page, I forget who the presenter was, but it was very well done. There was some good geopolitical analysis, but what it turns out that this guy, Herbert Armstrong, whoever he was, went to Cyprus 30 years ago and actually warned of a great many of the events that are coming up, especially vis-a-vis the tensions here and the synergistic energy with Germany, and also Great Britain, and also Russia. And I found them like, wow, some current events stuff was knocked out of the ballpark 30 years ago. And I thought, wow, now what happened when I, because all, when you're a detective, here's what you do, and this has been a bone with me for 35 years. When you're a detective, you know when you get your best clues quite often? You get your best clues by going to the trash dump. You get your best clues by digging through septic tanks. You get your best clues. You get your best evidence by not expecting it to be wrapped up in a fine perfume-smelling piece of plastic. But the fact that you get a clue means that you got to go get it. And it is the intellectual courage, if you will, that is required. And I see we got another caller. Good. I bet I know who it is, too. But it is the intellectual courage to go into the stinkiest, darkest places to find the truth that has given us the George Orwells, the Aldous Huxleys, the incredible genius of Henry Miller, the Graham Hancocks, the people who fearlessly go where no man will go, into the stinky, dark places. I don't care about Herbert Armstrong. What I want to know is how these people knew and saw this, because they got their information from someplace. And when we are looking for truth, something reliable, especially in these dark times, you need the people who will go any place just to hold something up and say, wait a minute, this bears, and really from my study of history, the historical stuff that this guy Herbert Armstrong put in this prophecy and visit to the president of Cyprus 30 years ago was mind-blowing. So I don't care who he is. He got it right. And people who get right, I listen to. People who get it wrong, I don't. We got another caller, and I'm betting I know this guy. It says here, Pear in Portland.
That's
and
me.
And I bet this is the chairman of the party of radical geezerhood.
That's right. You bet.
Pear Fogring.
How you doing, Mike?
All right. For those of you who don't know, Pear hosts a radio show in Portland, Oregon. Tell us about your show and then ask your question.
Well, it's called Fight the Empire. And I just finished episode 95. It's on every other Thursday on KBOO in Portland.
KBOO.
And, yeah. And, you know, it's, I had a before I get to that, I'm talking about Cyprus. I just read today or yesterday that the president of Cyprus warned his rich friends ahead of time that they better get their money out.
Yes.
Yes, but about my show, recently I interviewed a guy named David Yalop. He's a British writer, and we talked about, do you remember Pope John Paul I?
The one who lived for about 30 minutes?
33 days.
Yeah.
And then he died, and he was going to investigate the Vatican Bank, for one thing. And
Roberto Calvi hanging from a bridge in,
and he's going to investigate, he's going to get rid of all the members of the P2 Lodge, Masonic Lodge.
Propaganda 2, yep.
And he was also, they say he was going to change the church's position on birth control.
So he lived for 33 days.
That's right, yes. Yeah. And there's this book, it's called, In God's Name. You got it right here. Yes, In God's Name by David Yalop. That's Yallop. Very, very interesting book, and he's a neat guy to talk to.
So, Pear, when you mentioned John Paul I, what's the connection now to this transition between the Nazi Ratzinger Benedict and our new Pope Francis?
Well, I don't know. It's funny. I mean, this, the Pope John Paul I, Lucio Albino, he's an Italian guy. He was the Patriarch of Venice before he became Pope.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in some ways, he was very much like Pope Francis. He was sort of a humble guy, had a sense of humor, liked to meet the people and stuff. Didn't like serve. So I don't know. In some ways, this new Pope reminds me of John Paul I.
Well, all right. Now, listen, Pear, you're on dangerous ground, because if this Pope only lives for 30 or 40 days, I'm hunting you down like a dog, and I'm going to find out what you knew and when.
But, And nobody really was aware of what Pope John Paul I was going to do. I mean, he was considered sort of, you know, not a radical or anything like that. He was considered a very amiable fellow, very popular with the people. But he got in there, and all of a sudden he started shaking things up.
Well, I'm not so much suspecting that of Pope Francis. There have been a number of stories that have surfaced showing that he had very deep, dark connections to the dirty wars in Argentina in the 70s and the 80s,
which
many tens of thousands of people were disappeared. There were serious allegations, and I believe a suit or some press story certainly filed of his involvement in the kidnapping of two Jesuit priests. So this guy is clearly an apparatchik. There's a strong German influence in Argentina, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you, the boys from Brazil, you saw them all in Argentina with German accents, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But that goes back to the role of perhaps the Catholic Church in Germany as well, which is very powerful. And again, back to Cyprus. I wonder and watch it all that. But the church is people want to dismiss it because it's so obviously corrupt, but it's the largest holder of real estate, I believe, on in the entire planet.
It could be,
It has enormous political and cultural reach, and so it is not to be dismissed or thrown away. I guess we can be relieved if Rome doesn't blow up tomorrow, but we still keep our eyes open and look for the truth.
Well, yes. There's an article also by Cyprus. There was an article by Ellen Brown, you know who she is,
mm-hmm.
who she says that, hey, that could happen here, too.
It could happen in a great many places, and I'm sure that on some levels the case of Cyprus is serving as a model to condition people around the world for when it comes to their doorstep. Again, it's that old saying from Reverend Niemöller, first they came for the Greeks, and then they came for the Cypriots, and when they came for me, there was nobody left to say anything. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a matter of what we'll take. How are things up in Portland? You know, I saw a great movie called Occupied Cascadia.
Oh, really? I never heard that one.
You have not. It's amazing. I don't know how this movie has stayed hidden for so long. It's got all people from Cascadia, Charles Eisenstein, amazing minds, amazing brains, beautifully filmed, beautifully photographed, and I thought sure you would have seen it. Charles Eisenstein's in it.
Oh, I interviewed him on my show one time. Interesting guy.
Well, yeah, he's been on this show twice, and I'm going to have him on in a couple of weeks.
Well,
Occupied Cascadia is the best exemplification of a living guy in consciousness I've seen anywhere. The best exposition of what it means. I miss Portland for all the listeners. I've spent a lot of time up in Portland over the years. I met Per Fagering. It was in 2001. I think it was right before I lectured at Portland State.
Yeah,
no,
was
it was the day I spoke
at the
bookstore.
Fairgrounds in Eugene or something?
Down in Eugene. That was even way before 9/11. That was 1999 or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's that event down in L.A. where the three women from Arkansas came out. Remember
that? I don't remember that, at least not for the record. What three women from Arkansas?
Well, the mother of one of those high school kids who was killed by the train. Remember
that? Oh, the Arkansas train death. Yes.
And then there was reporter Mara Leverett.
Mara Leverett.
About it,
yep.
And then a woman who was a state investigator, and she was forced to leave Arkansas because of death threats. She moved to Texas.
We have been at this Per Fagering for a long time, have we not?
I think so. Yeah, we're getting old and cranky, aren't we?
Yeah, but we're still remembering the details. So
we got to. Somebody's got to remember all this stuff.
Oh, that's good, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for calling. Say hello to all my friends. Say hello to Lisa Mann if you see her. We played her music a lot on the show. And everybody else there in Portland, I miss all you guys, and maybe we'll get up there sometime soon.
Well, I hope you do. I hope you do. Well, anyway, good hearing you.
Thanks, Bear.
Hey, bye.
Bye. All right. See, I think it's good that the show has kind of slowed down on the pace. There was a tremendous amount of intensity going into this show. But I'm looking for anybody who's got clues, because we need answers. And I do believe that a great deal of what we are walking through together as a species, and especially those of us who are struggling to evolve and struggling with all of our hearts to help those around us evolve so that we all may benefit, it's time to just slow down because this stuff will eat you up. And it has been amazingly intense. Maybe I should have played Avalanche and Earthquake tonight. Here's a story I got from the Extinction Protocol, which has been doing very, very good work. And I watch them regularly. I also want to express great thanks to Robin Westenra, who has been all over the Cypriot situation, catching breaking stories all over the world. He puts them up on Facebook. His work has been indispensable. And I remain the detective following in the footsteps of the Henry Millers and all those brave thinkers who would go anywhere to find a nugget of truth. Hemingway was good at that, so much of that. It has to do with being able to see and recognize a grain of lucidity and coherence when you see it and follow it, being willing and able to lay aside all personal prejudices against the messenger, just to look for the clues. And that's what detectives do, and that's what those courageous teachers for me did. 24 dead as tornado hailstorms lash South China. Now, we've been talking about bad weather. I'm talking about at least 24 people died, and scores were injured after a tornado carrying huge hailstones lashed southern China, causing widespread devastation and a ferry to capsize. You see photographs, I saw some photographs of this hailstorm, and it looked like cars had been shot with bigger than 50 caliber rounds. I shot with like 20 millimeter cannon rounds. Such force in these, and 24 people dead. The violent weather, and, you know, I for one cannot, and I'm not able to divorce the weather phenomenon from the horrible environmental destruction that Chinese industry is wreaking on the environment of China. And it's not Chinese industry, it's just industry. It's just the infinite growth paradigm. Only I can see the people in Washington, I can see the big banks in New York and London, looking at China in much the same way perhaps they looked at Russia or the former Soviet Union as, hey, let's go suck the money out of these people, let's get them hooked on our way in the consumption, and let's not tell them about. You know, we looted Russia, and China is absolutely destroying itself, not only with the vacant cities. You miss the point if you fail to see that their beaches are destroyed, their oceans have doubled the pollution in 1 year. The air is so thick in Beijing, you can't see. They're selling fresh air for $8 a can. And now Mother Earth is acting up. And to me, it is obvious that we have to see that all of this is utterly connected. It all makes sense. And so we will watch with enormous interest what unfolds in Cyprus and what kind of stresses we see appearing between the new Holy Roman Empire, the European Union. Very amazing correlations there. That was really good work. And Russia and Germany and the power blocks. I want to come back because I'm really struck by this. I have so many friends in Ireland, including Lord Randall Plunkett, who is a friend, and the people at beautiful Castle Dunsany that I hope to see sometime north of Dublin, Colin Campbell out in the west of Ireland. I have so many friends in Ireland and Scotland and the UK, and I just want to read this. This is from the BBC. It was a big headline. Farmers abandoned due to heavy snow in Northern Ireland. It's from the BBC the 23rd yesterday. Farmers have been abandoned and left to fend for themselves, that's in quotes, as heavy snow continues to block roads, a Northern Ireland Assembly member has claimed. Independent MLA Basil, MLA member of Parliament, Basil McRae, described the situation as an emergency and called on the Stormont's Department of Agriculture to respond. Sinn Féin's Oliver McMullen said blocked roads in North Antrim were badly affecting rural families. The MLA said weather conditions were the worst he had seen in years. The snow is simply too deep for even farming equipment to clear the minor roads. animals are in distress because of lack of feed. The owners are stuck away from the property, can't get there. The roads can't be cleared. Mr. McMullen has taken several calls from the concerned constituents, some of whom have not been able to access their farms and homes since Friday due to the impassable roads. He said they were asking for more help because they have not been able to feed their animals. There were also matching video clips from BBC, which took you to the Midlands, near Yorkshire, and to Wales. And it's horrendously powerful snowfall, freezing temperatures, abnormal. In the United Kingdom, with a 36-hour store of natural gas. Now, this is stuff that people in the peak oil movement were screaming about many, many years ago, but it is in-your-face reminder of the vulnerability of complex systems. And when complex systems fail, they fail spectacularly. They fail big. And there is serious power politics and economic politics being played now around the world, and we catch glimpses of it. We look for answers. That's my job. That's our job. And we also look, we hold a conscious edge of the suffering that's going on around the world. I mean, I could have gone to Australia and all that, but you get the point. That's the conscious half of the blade, which along with our vision, along with the fact that we slowed down and we took a little breath tonight, we dialed ourselves into the rhythm of this, and we allowed ourselves to settle down because it's a long road we have to walk together, my friends. And we will be back next week on Easter with another show, and I'll be watching Cyprus closely, and I'm sure much more will be revealed. And 2 weeks from tonight, Charles Eisenstein joins us again. That's going to be a huge show, just as big as Graham Hancock. And we wish Graham Hancock well. And this is Tracker of Truth, Michael C. Rupert, on the Lifeboat Hour. We'll see you next week. Good night.
PRN.FM. PRN.FM. The number one station for progressive minds. Progressive minds.
Not this record! Not this record! Not this record!